10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling After Dark. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I'm sitting in tonight. Coming up, we're going to talk to you about Trump walking out, a lawsuit about the White House cage match. Matthias will be with us, and somebody who slipped on mashed potatoes. That's all coming up.
In a shocking move, tonight's guest star is Casey Bartholomew on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Your vacation has been saved. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Florida is a beautiful mix of diverse people and cultures. Florida Stories is about them getting arrested. I'm James Parker. Florida Stories, still to come on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Please arrest me. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
In a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. In case he comes to town. What? In a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. So he won't take me down to his lair deep under the mountain.
What are you talking about?
Underground. That's where he keeps his dirt.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's solving a problem for you. Cause Sterling doesn't actually want to.
Hi, Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling Every Damn Night. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. I always forget the music. I always forget the music that Walter plays, and I always get a kick out of it when I show up. All right, a bunch of stuff we're going to get to this hour, like I said, a little later on, we think, because this show is so very loosely planned. We think Matthias is going to be on with us in about a half an hour talking about movies and entertainment. We'll get into that. We are going to talk about a woman who slipped on mashed potatoes and because she's an idiot and thinks she deserves a big pile of money. We're going to get into a lawsuit over the cage match at the White House because there's a lawsuit. It just looks like a big Barnum and Bailey kind of thing over at the White House. I don't get that. So that's all coming up. Right now, though, I don't know if you caught Meet the Press this morning. I don't always watch those shows because they know what they're going to say. And usually that time of the morning, there's like a Friends marathon on, and I can catch that. I feel better about myself when I watch that. But I did catch this. Visibly agitated, Donald Trump stormed off his interview with NBC News after a testy exchange with reporter Krista Welker, who grilled him over his claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him. I guess because we can't just all agree to disagree on anything, and that's fine. But you know, Trump's not going to go, it wasn't stolen. That's wrong. It wasn't. I was just saying stuff, you know, and then get on with his day. You know, that's not going to happen. So why don't we just move on? There are current allegations of election theft. And it's very embarrassing. As someone who is, I'm actually from California. Don't blame me for anything. I haven't lived there since 1999 when I was very young. So I had nothing to do with what's going on today, but I don't know how they can't count their votes. I don't know how the election was Tuesday. It is Sunday, almost Monday. And we still don't have votes counted all the way through. Gee, if you could think of a way to try to make it look like there was cheating, this is it. This is how you do it. If you were trying to think of a way to make it look that way, I don't know that there is cheating. Like I said, I'm from California. There's a lot of stupid people there. They don't really know how to count very well. So math is really hard. That's why I left. You're not helping your cause any. Also trying to tell everybody that In-N-Out Burger is good. It's not. And I can say that because I'm from there. Now, Trump lashed out at Krista Welker after she insisted he failed to provide a shred of evidence about his disputed accusations that the 2020 election was rigged against him or that the elections in California are subject to what they say, malfeasance. And I'm proud of myself for being able to read that word. But and she is right. He hasn't provided any evidence about 2020, because there isn't any. But if you look at the current elections in California and how the vote level tallies have kind of magically changed, almost a week later, it does sort of give the appearance of impropriety. Even got somebody from the DOJ going out there to watch counting. One guy, I guess, from the DOJ. Remember when we were the country that used to go to other countries and watch them count their ballots? We were that country, and now we got, wait, why don't we just ask, you know, have some Sandinistan rebels come down and watch us count our ballots. Have some Cuban communists fly in and just watch us count our ballots because we can't be trusted. Look, I don't know that there's anything going on, but it doesn't look great, does it? Doesn't look great since we can't seem to get ballots counted a week later. Now, Trump fumed during the interview, which aired today, said, "You're a one-sided crooked network. Let's call it quits because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good time." Welker pleaded with Trump to continue, recalling how she trekked over to Wisconsin for the interview, but the president was done. He said, "I sat in the rain with you for over an hour." It sounds like a love song. Doesn't like sound like a sweet 70s movie song or something. I sat in the rain with you for an hour, something like that. But he said, "On and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press. A country can never be great with a dishonest press." After airing the testy exchange, Walker revealed that she spoke with Trump afterward, and he agreed to do a follow-up interview with her, though it's not clear when. Walker had claimed that she and Trump acknowledged complications caused by the rain during the interview that aired on Sunday. I didn't see any complications. I don't know. I saw it. I didn't see any. But again, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. It seems that Trump was a little testy. I will say that. Maybe traveling made him that way. Maybe the rain, maybe everything going on. I don't know. But it did seem he was a little testy about things. Now, the interview started to get testy towards the final 6 minutes when Welker pressed Trump on a proposed $1.776 billion anti-weaponization fund that aimed to award cash payouts to victims of federal lawfare. Most of his friends, sadly. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche confirmed to lawmakers last week that the Justice Department scrapped the controversial fund, but some skeptics raised concerns that it could get revived. Well, of course it could. Everything could get revived. All politicians are liars. Remember when Joe Biden said he wasn't going to pardon his son? And then, oh, look what happened. And he pardoned everybody with the last name Biden, except for that poor little girl. Who's the stripper's son? Is Joe's granddaughter? He didn't pardon her. In fact, I think he charged her with some crimes. That's sad. That's what makes me sad. Now, Trump called the fund a great idea and said he'd be disappointed if it doesn't get approved. It's not. Welker then pressed Trump about whether January 6, 2021 Capitol rioters should be able to get money from a hypothetical anti-weaponization fund, to which Trump said, "Now, I don't know what's going to happen with the weaponization fund. I love the idea. People like stupid former President Joe Biden, he's not smart enough to know what's going on. But people that surrounded him, what they did to the lives of people, they destroyed people. They sent people to jail who did nothing wrong." Welker shot back that there was no evidence of what you're saying and tried to pivot the question about Blanche instead. But Trump brought up the 2020 election, saying the election was rigged. It was a dirty election. Trump snapped about the election when she lost to Biden. NBC host noted that Trump hasn't presented evidence to prove his dubious claims about the 2020 election. Eventually, after a tense exchange, Trump opted to cut the interview short, and he got up. And I guess they're going to redo it. But somebody was a grump. My mom would say, my mother would say, when I was very young and I was a little on edge, she would say I was a grumpy bear. So somebody was President Grumpy Bear today is all I'll say about that. So hopefully they'll have another interview, because I think the president should be available to the press for the interview. Biden never was. Never saw Biden talking to the press because they had to prep him for the answers first. But you never saw that. So hopefully they'll get the situation back together and they'll get to talk to each other. All right. When we come back, speaking of things with Trump, there is a lawsuit that was filed just yesterday that would stop the big, giant, really stupid cage match that's going to happen on the White House lawn. I'm sorry. I like Trump. I voted for Trump. This is just stupid to have the cage match up there, and it looks ridiculous. I'm not watching it because I think you have to pay to watch it. My son wants to watch it, but he likes the fighting. He doesn't care about the political aspect of it. He likes the fighting. And I told him if he wants to pay for it, he can, but I ain't paying for that. But we'll get into all that stuff. 855-839-1210 is the number here. I'm Casey Bartholomew, sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling!
All right, Sterling every damn night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. Coming up in about 15 minutes. Well, now I say we think, we hope Mateus will be on. He's supposed to be. He's on the paper that they give me when I sit in for Walter. So we'll just have to see if that happens. Sometimes I get a paper filling in for Walter, and it says what's going to happen, and none of it happens. And sometimes I get papers that don't tell me anything that's going to happen. So this show about what happens is just as interesting and fun for me as it is for you. But hopefully that'll be coming up in about 15 minutes. All right. There was a lawsuit filed yesterday, and it's seeking to block the Trump administration's UFC fight scheduled to take place at the White House next week on President Trump's birthday, June 14th. I honestly think that's stupid. I really honestly think a giant cage match is stupid. I'm not a big fan of the cage fighting. My son is. When he was about, 13, I think I took him to see one just because he was into it on YouTube or something. And he got into it, and that's fine. I didn't think too much of it. And I've seen a few over the years with him, and he's really excited about it. He's 18 now. He's really excited about it. He's going to pay for it because I told him I'm not paying for that nonsense. I don't think there should be a cage match on the White House lawn. I tend to have a little bit more respect for the White House than that, but that's what he's hoping he's going to watch. Plaintiffs in the lawsuit argue that the event is deeply corrupt. Okay. And have accused Trump of benefiting from the event financially, citing reporting that this says the president purchased up to $50,000 of stock in TKO, UFC's parent company, earlier this year. The event is neither for the celebration. This is the lawsuit. The event is neither for the celebration of the 250th anniversary of American independence, nor, crucially, being planned, organized, and executed by the federal government. Apparently that matters. Rather, UFC Freedom 250 is a private, for-profit sporting event being planned, organized, and executed by the UFC, its broadcast partners, and its advertisers, not by the federal government, and it is not in any material sense a celebration of the 250th anniversary of American independence. It is instead a celebration of the UFC's brand and the 80th anniversary of Donald Trump's birth. I don't like the idea of the fight, but everything's up. You put it all up. It's all there. I kind of think your time to file the lawsuit was already before, you know, before they start building everything. Now it's all, everything is an attention grab. And I know it's a big attention grab. And I do think it looks hideous on the White House lawn. I absolutely do. But filing a lawsuit, I think, at this point in time, well, it's all going to depend on what judge it gets in front of, right? All this stuff always depends on what judge it gets in front of. If it gets in front of a judge that was appointed by Trump, they're going to say, shut up and get lost, basically, is what they're going to say. If it comes up before a judge who was appointed by literally anyone else, then it's questionable as to whether or not it'll be allowed to go forward. And it doesn't say, does it say where they filed the lawsuit. So it doesn't matter. You should have to file it where it is, but sometimes they don't care about that. Now, UFC is selling VIP packages for between $1 million and $1.5 million per head, according to reporting cited in the lawsuit. Haven't heard that? Wouldn't surprise me. Because I have a feeling this is going to be a one-off event. And the people who want to show up, like, unless Trump does it again next year or the year after that, I have a feeling this is going to be a one-off. And it's just going to be done when it's over. And it's going to be this whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, it's going to be this historical event, and people are going to be willing to pay the money to get to say they were there or get any stuff that comes from being there, from having attended that, because it's going to be possibly worth money someday. So it's going to be a historical event. I hadn't heard the $1 million to $1.5 million per head. Wouldn't shock me, but I hadn't heard that. And I work in the news media. Doesn't mean I hear everything. It just means I haven't heard this. Now, the suit alleges the White House cage fight does not qualify for enactment under the National Park Service's temporary rule that authorizes a suspension of permit rules for special events planned, organized, and executed by executive departments and agencies or the Semiquincentennial Commission for the celebration of the 250th anniversary of American independence to occur on D.C.'s monument grounds. But they don't say how it doesn't. They say it's just a money-making grab, so they don't really say how it doesn't. A Trump administration official said the lawsuit is obstructionist, baseless, and dilatory, while comparing the upcoming UFC to previous events on the South Lawn. However, attorneys say damage to the White House grounds from the construction of the Cage Octagon Arena. I will say this. In my entire broadcasting career, until just recently, I have never said the words White House and Cage Octagon Arena construction in the same breath. It's just never come up. So this is a new one for me. I've never done this either. But they say the damage to the grounds and arena and corporate branding make the event different. The lawsuit says brands are clamoring over each other to see their brands plastered adjacent to the executive residence and reflecting pool. Well, if that's the case, if brands are tripping over themselves, it kind of sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? Again, I'm not going to watch it, so I don't particularly care. The lawsuit continues, and the UFC's broadcast partner, Paramount Skydance, which is run by two other Trump allies, Larry and David Ellison, has decided that no American will be able to take in this celebration of America without first paying $8.99 plus tax for a Paramount Plus streaming subscription, it continues, which I don't pay for. Like I said, my son's going to pay for it, but he's going to pay for it. It's $9 of his money. He can do it. I don't care what he does with his money. It's his money. Now, plaintiffs Susan Douglas and Paul Romano say that they are being harmed by the event. Susan Douglas, who's a retired government employee, says she's suffering aesthetic, physical, expressive, and procedural harm. She's retired. How are all those things accurate? And Paul Romano says, a retired Air Force sergeant, said he's suffering aesthetic, dignitary, and procedural harms, which in legalese, I can explain that to you, what she means is that what they both mean is that the harm that they are experiencing is non-existent because it's unprovable. So they don't have any actual harm happening. They probably found somebody, and I don't have the information here, but they probably found somebody who was willing to file a lawsuit and try to stop it. Again, you don't want to watch it. Do what I'm doing. Don't watch it. I'm not going to see it. It won't matter to me in the least. My son's going to watch it. More power to him. He's 18. I'm just not going to watch it. So it won't be an issue for me personally. 855-839-1210. I'm Casey Bartholomew. You're listening to Sterling Every Damn Night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling Every Damn Night. Just call 855-839-1210. It is time, and we're glad you're here because we never know if Walter wrote down the right information, Mateus.
I'm here.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. Sometimes it's on the paper and you're not here. Sometimes there's a lot of things on the paper that don't happen. So we're kind
of... I can believe it. But...
Yeah, that's Walter. But
calling from California where math is hard. I know because I suffer, but, you know, I've got an abacus here and I'm just starting out to see if I can make it by pushing the beads across and figuring out what it's all about. But it's great to talk to you, Casey. Thanks for being here tonight.
They asked me and I said, sure, why not? That was pretty much the extent of the in-depth negotiations for it. So I don't really have anything. So what is going on in Hollywood that you would like to share with us or in the entertainment
world?
Well,
there's a highly anticipated comic book movie has opened this last Friday, and it was expected to do very well. And, of course, all the social media influencers saying it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. It's brought them back to their childhood. I didn't know what childhood they had and if I saw the same movie they did, but I'm talking about Amazon and MGM Studios and Mattel Toys made Masters of the Universe. Now, of course,
that was more of a toy movie. That's my wheelhouse. All right, Master of the Universe.
Right.
I didn't see the movie. I saw the original with Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella.
Right, 1987.
And yeah, exactly.
Langella was great in that.
He actually was, man. He was very good in that movie. But the movie itself was. I mean, the movie itself, the original was camp and it was fun. It was a bad movie, but it was fun.
Yes, which is exactly what they were trying to do with this movie, Casey, but they didn't quite hit the mark. I mean, this franchise, of course, started with action figures. There were seven animated TV series. There were books. There were magazines. There were video games. And this is the third feature film based on these stories and these characters of He-Man.
This is the third? I thought it was only the second.
The third. Well, no, there was one in between there, and so this is the second one with the title Masters of the Universe, but they had other characters that were other toys. They made it a movie with that. I'm having a mind fart right now, so I can't tell you what it is, but there was a female character that had her own movie. That's right. She had her own movie.
She's his sister.
Right, there you go. Yeah. Now you've nailed it. So anyway,
I'm sad that I know that.
Well, I think it's great, and thank you for helping me do my job.
Sure.
Anyway, but this latest permutation starts. Nicholas Galitzine is He-Man, and Jared Leto as Skeletor, who is trying to obtain, according to the plot of this movie, the Sword of Castle Grayskull, which has magical power. And He-Man is really Prince Adam of Eternia, who fled to Earth with the sword when Eternia was under attack. Now, the movie depicts Adam as this daydreaming nerd obsessed with finding the sword, which he lost when he came to this planet, and he has no idea where it is. Mm-hmm. So he has to return to Eternia to save the day, but no one believes him. They think it's all part of his fertile imagination. And right from the first scenes on Earth, which stand out in sharp contrast to the cool fantasy scenes on Eternia, which open the movie, the movie's dumb. I mean, dumb contemporary dialogue and feeble attempt at humor. It fails at once, making the whole movie a chore to keep watching. I mean, Jared Leto's Skeletor seems to be channeling Tim Curry's performance in Legend. I mean, he's just English accent with very suave, rhyming, diabolical laughs. But no, it's just not working. And so it's just really horrible. I couldn't believe it. And
I've heard the movie of the movie Legend. I think shortly after it came out.
Right.
Mia Sarah from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ed Rooney's office. Okay, we'll all be going there.
I had no friends when I was a kid, so I saw movies. So that's what I did.
I get it. I had a lonely life in the dark theaters too, which is why I'm here now. Yeah. And so there is an amusing moment. There's one amusing moment in this movie. It's a cameo from Dolph Lundgren, who's working out in a gym. And there's Nicholas Galitzine being dumb and asks him advice on, you know, how to work out. And he just looks at him like he's disgusted by him, because obviously he had read the script. At any rate, he got work. Anyway, it's so bad it leaves a stain on the screen. And I'm looking at the box office. It actually is second place, but it only made $29 million since Friday. It was expected to make $200 million.
This weekend?
Has been all about horror movies.
Oh, my God.
So the horror movies are making the money. Scary Movie did $55 million since Friday.
Well, that's
Back
not
Rooms,
a horror movie.
A small film. with 26. Well, in a way, Obsession, which is going on. This is a 20-year-old film director, and now he's being offered $10 million for his next film. This is called Backrooms. Rather, Obsession. And so that's what's tops right now, and I just could not believe it. So
that makes
me,
when I read about, I asked my son if he wanted to go see Masters of the Universe this weekend, and he said no. And we had heard it was going to be awful. What I had heard is that they were hoping to, they thought they would get the same lightning in a bottle that they got with Barbie. But they forgot that Barbie had a talented director, a talented star, talented co-stars, and a good script. And I think they forgot all those things.
They're just trying too hard. It clearly is trying to be a campy. They knew it was campy material to start with, so they thought they'd camp it up more, and they didn't need to. They could have just made it like a straight story, campy, and it would have been funny. But no, they tried too hard to make it overly campy. Yeah. As a midnight movie, it might have legs, but I think it'll be forgotten in a couple of weeks.
Well, you know, what I was hoping for was like the camp, like movies that are so bad that you can actually sit back and watch, like Jaws 4 or something, which is a horrible movie, but I'll sit back and watch that because it's so bad.
Well,
that's what I was hoping for.
You can do that with the 1987 Masters of the Universe, even though the performances are good because the production value is low budget. It was, you know, one of those Canon films.
Yeah.
They were always low budget.
We didn't
expect anything more. It was just what it was. This, we've got all this money behind it. You've got big stars in it. Something? No.
Nothing. Yeah, did you, at least like you said, the original had Frank Langella, which really, it sounds ridiculous, it really is a phenomenal performance as Skeletor.
It really is great. You know, he was behind that skull, but he would rubber skull at that, but he was great at it.
You mentioned Canon. That just brought flashback. Did you ever see the documentary on Canon films?
No. Is it about I can't think of saying of his last name, Globus?
They made a documentary about Canon Films, and Canon Films was like a reliable moneymaker throughout the 80s because they had two piles. They had Chuck and Charles, and they put Chuck Norris films in one thing and Charles Bronson films, and they cost no money, but because they didn't cost any money, they all made money, and they started lose money. I can't remember what movie it was, but there was one particular movie where they decided to really throw some money behind it, and they lost everything. But there's a great documentary. I mean, they had Break-In and Break-In 2, Electric Boogaloo, and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That was great stuff. It was great stuff, and it's taken me back, and I watched that documentary. And now that took me back. So and I've heard about the movie Obsession too. I've really wanted to see that. That sounds interesting. I like horror movies, so that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale. You know, you may not want what you wish for, and the guy who wishes that this girl falls in love with him gets it to the point of all the way to the end of his life. Let's put it that way, without giving too much away.
That gave a little bit away there. You just gave a little bit away.
No, you know, because there is the afterlife. This is horror movies, you know.
This is horror, They're going to be ruined. Well, if it's made this kind of money and it didn't cost anything to make, you know there's going to be a sequel. It's like that Back Rooms one. My son went and saw that with his buddies, and no one can say what the ending is because it'll ruin it for everybody. But then they're also saying nobody can say what the ending is because nobody can tell. Nobody knows.
It's always fun to be ambiguous because then you leave it open to
I hate
ambiguity. Interpretation.
I hate ambiguity.
Sure.
If I'm paying money to see a movie, I don't want to be cute. Just tell me
how
it
ends. That could be considered malfeasance, the word you used earlier in the show.
It was written down. I didn't think of that myself. I couldn't even spell it. All right. Well, what's coming out next week? Because we're in the summer season now, so big movies should be pouring out here, right?
Oh yes, we've got a new movie from Steven Spielberg. I'm going to see it tomorrow. It's Aliens Coming from Outer Space.
Oh, I heard that's supposed to be
out of nightmare.
Disclosure Day.
Disclosure Day. Thank you. Thank you. I'm supposed to know these titles, but thanks for filling in for me.
That's what I'm here for. I'm just the filling guy. That's what I do.
So I have to say this though. Last night was D-Day, the anniversary of D-Day.
Yes.
And there's a great movie out right now about D-Day called Pressure, as in barometric pressure.
Brendan Fraser, right?
he plays Dwight Eisenhower, which is kind of a stretch, but you get into it after a while. And Andrew Scott is the English weatherman that tells him precisely when he needs to make the D-Day invasion and waltz right into history very dramatically. But he has other factions, U.S. weathermen, that say this guy's off his nut, and that's the bad time to do it. So it's the battle of the weathermen as Ike has to decide, and soon, what is the definitive action to make history. And it's one of the best movies this year.
Is it really? Because the way you're describing it, I didn't know about weather reports.
No, I know. Can there be a thrilling movie about weather?
I guess, but here you go.
Well made.
That's you know, it's if you get a good movie, it doesn't matter what it's about, does it?
No, really? But this is really solid. It's in the top movies we'll remember at the end of the year when they start thinking about Oscars.
I'm glad Brendan Fraser is back because I don't know if you saw that movie he made, Replacement Family.
Well, I don't know if it's as good as George's The Jungle, but my favorite.
Replacement Family is pretty good. It's actually a good. It just came out this year or last year. It was a really good movie. I enjoyed it. It's very, very, very entertaining. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen that, it was better than George of the Jungle. And now I feel like you're mocking.
I'm not mocking it, There's a wonderful movie about the film director James Whale that he also appears in that was really great. And, of course, now I've completely forgotten the title of that. Don't know if it's The Mockery. No, it wasn't The Whale. No, director James Whale. And it's a fabulous movie. You know, it's about the making of the movie Frankenstein and the memories that the director has when he makes the movie Frankenstein. And for some reason, I have a film print of this movie in 35mm in my garage right now. I could walk there and see the title, but for some reason I can't pull it out of my brain now. But there you go.
I have to take a break, so I'm going to have to let you go. Matthias, it was great. I hope to talk to you again soon.
It's great, Casey. I thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Matthias in Hollywood, our man in Hollywood with all the great information. We love talking to him. All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. I'm Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
People of Walmart. From the beautiful city, it's a metropolis, really, called Oil City. That's like a nickname for Casper, Wyoming. And this comes from the vaunted and award-winning Oil City News. A feller is in Walmart, and apparently he's been on the frequent robbery type of guy. His name is Trey Robert Watson. I'm guessing he goes by Trey. He's 34 years old. Apparently, he's been arrested in that store about five or more times. He's been a shoplifting regular. Now, court records show that he also was in charge in Sheridan County in March. And they asked him to go spend time in treatment. Yeah, chemical dependency problem. So here's the deal. The Casper police get a call from your neighborhood Walmart. They zip over and they find this feller and they search him. They find a couple of knives that he allegedly stole. And he then looked at the police with puppy dog eyes and said, "Please arrest me. Please put me in jail." Now, what we don't know about Master Watson, we don't know if his wife's a battle axe. We don't know if there's not peace at home. Or perhaps he just needs to be sober. He's gone through court-ordered treatment, and they found a syringe on him. It was empty, and inside the syringe they tried to test, but not enough residue. Apparently, he knows how to get whatever he was shooting up pretty much set up into his system, which I think takes a lot of skill. Now, if he's shooting up, one would think that it's likely heroin. It could be trank. It could be a liquefied weed. I don't know. Do you shoot up liquefied weed? I'm not necessarily your big drug use expert. What I can say is this. If you're at Walmart in Casper, Wyoming, and your goal in life is to go to jail, yeah, life is not going well for you. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. Don't sleep tonight. It's Sterling every damn night. He'll whet your conversation appetite for a show complete. Boy, what a treat. Delivered hot right to your home, even to the eternal city of Rome. Don't download a podcast or watch TV. Sterling every damn night is totally free. Oh, what flavor in every bite. Don't sleep tonight.
every damn night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. It's 855-839-1210. We've still got a bunch of stuff to get to on the show. We're getting close to being up against the clock here. I will say that I'm really disappointed that the after talking to Mateus, the Masters of the Universe movie, I knew it wasn't going to be good. I knew when they said they were going to make it, they were going to screw it up somehow, because anytime I hear about a movie coming out that I think is really going to be, that really has a chance, and I read about them making it, I knew they were going to screw it up. But I think it's just my general pessimistic nature, because I thought Barbie was going to be an epic disaster as well, and Barbie turned out to be a good time all across the board. But so Masters of the Universe, and I did, when I was a little kid, I did see the 1987 version with Dolph Lundgren, Frank Langella, and Courtney Cox was in it too. This was a pre-Friends. This was pre-Friends, post-Bruce Springsteen video. Courtney Cox was in it. And now I was kind of looking forward to seeing it. Like I said before the break, I wanted to take my son to go see it today. But he's not quite out of that phase. He's 18 now, so he's all grown up. He's going to start college soon. He's not quite out of that phase where he doesn't want to spend any time with his old man. But either way, I didn't get to see it, and that's all there is. So coming up, we are going to talk to you about a felon and whether or not he should be allowed to coach kids. We'll talk to you all about that stuff. That'll be coming up. My name is Casey Bartholomew, and I'm sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Hi, this is Sterling Every Damn Night. I know where I am. Sterling Every Damn Night. My name's Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in tonight. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. Bunch of stuff we're still going to get to. Talk about the Bible diets. We're going to talk about repair cafes, voter ID, and whether or not a felon should be allowed to coach some kids.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's better than Phil Donahue. And he's on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling Every Damn Night. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. This story comes out of Florida. A volunteer football coach with the Pinellas County Schools says he was let go after a change in how the state does background checks. That coach says he's had been completely honest about his troubled past. It's nice. Honesty is nice, I think. Doesn't change my opinion on anything, but honesty is nice. Dennis Tennell is his name. He had been a volunteer football coach for Pinellas County Schools for the past 9 years, most recently with Clearwater High School. He said it's one of the most important parts of his life. It's about the kids, man. This is a quote. And if you don't have good coaches and mentors, then you're setting these kids up for failure. The question is whether he's a good coach and mentor. You see, Mr. Tennell has felony cocaine possession on his record from the year of our Lord, 2007. He says this season, Pinellas County Schools told him he would not be allowed to return to the sidelines after failing his background check due to the aforementioned felony for cocaine possession in 2007. Well, that's it, right? That's all. We can forgive you your felonies. We can forgive you your crimes, but I don't want any felons working with kids. If it was my, I don't care how good of a coach you are. You committed a felony. You don't get to work with kids. That's the line, by the way. I have committed no felonies. Therefore, I will not be working with any kids. Or I can't, or I'm sorry. Therefore, I can work with kids. I choose not to. Because kids annoy me. If somebody commits a felony, there's your line. That's how you decide. And no, we aren't going to look at, the possession. Yeah, I, by the way, I'm also certain, 100% certain, that his felony cocaine possession from 2007. I'm sure that's the one and only time he was ever possessing cocaine. I'm sure that's the one single solitary time it happened. And he, gosh darn it all the heck, he got himself caught. And so now, you know, every other time he wasn't possessing cocaine. He got caught that time. Also, so he's possessing cocaine. Nobody just possesses cocaine. You possess cocaine because you're either going to use cocaine or you're going to sell cocaine. You never just, I just got cocaine. I just have cocaine. What are you going to do with it? Nothing. I just wanted it. I just have, I'm just in possession of cocaine. I just wanted cocaine. I didn't want to use it. I didn't want to sell it. I just wanted to have. That's because all the cool kids have cocaine. So anyway, he doesn't get to coach anymore. And those are the rules because we don't want scumbags around our kids, right? I don't want scumbags around my kids. And my kids are adults now, so they make that decision for themselves. But if they ask me, I would say, no, I don't want any scumbags around you because people who commit felonies are scumbags. But he said this season he's not going to be allowed to do it. Pinellas County, this is a quote from Dennis Tennell. He said, Pinellas County knows about my background because I've been coaching 10 years. They see your background every year you're coaching football. You have to submit paperwork. They see the changes or the charges on there. All right. Rules changed. Now you can't. Problem solved. If it was really that important to you, if coaching kids was really that important to you, if it was really your calling in life, I'm going to guess you wouldn't have, you know, possessed cocaine when you had the opportunity to possess cocaine. Tennell said more than a dozen letters of support were submitted to the school district asking for his reinstatement, including one from Clearwater's head football coach, Thor Jozwiak. Jozwiak? Jozwiak? I don't know. Cool name, though, Thor. I don't ever think too much about my own name, Casey. I don't question the masculinity of it, whatever, you know. But then somebody named Thor, and it's like, oh, I guess that's better than Casey. Anyway, Thor said this, I am writing to offer my strongest possible recommendation for Dennis Tennell and to advocate for his reinstatement as a volunteer football coach at Clearwater High School. Coach Tennell has served on my staff since 2022, so 4 years. And during that time, he has made an undeniable impact on our football program and, more importantly, on the young men we serve, except for the felony. He's still a felon. Was there nobody volunteering? I mean, seriously, how bad are things in Clearwater, Florida? That's where the Scientologists are. I know that. They have like a foundation or a base in Clearwater. The Scientologists are weird. So the Scientologists are out there. Is there nobody else? Is it this guy or nobody? The only people volunteering to coach football in Clearwater, Florida in 2026 are cokeheads. That's it. If you don't have cokeheads, you got nothing. You don't get anything. Now, he may not be a cokehead, but he possessed cocaine. So, I mean, I'm willing to lean that way if need be. Now, former players say the team just won't be the same without Coach Dennis. Yes, it will have one less felon on it. There will be one less felon human on there. One of the former players, Parker Sternkorb, said there's a lot of former players that I still talk to and that he's still in contact with, that he really helped them get into colleges, helped them get into high school, and put them on the right path. They're in high school. This is Clearwater High School. How do you help them get into high school? By the way, it's the law. If you're under 16, you go to high school. I don't know how he helps with that, but whatever. He helped them get into college. He put them on the right path. All he has to say is, don't be like me, because I possess cocaine, or in the past I have. So try not to be like me, and that'll be great. Now, another person, Carmelo Williams, said, I was devastated and frustrated because he means a lot to the football players. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, but okay. Whatever you want to say. While Coach Dennis said he needs the team just as much as the team needs him. He says, me and my wife, we do game day meals. We do cookouts for the kids. We do all this. Trust me, those kids are like my kids. And to try and take that from me, it's been actually worse going through this than actually going through the crime itself. Well, I guess you would know. See, I wouldn't know because I'm not a felon. Can Coach Tinnell say that? He cannot. Now, Pinellas County School sent a statement saying Florida law now requires that school districts, including Pinellas County Schools, submit all fingerprint-based criminal background screenings through the statewide care provider background screening clearinghouse. The clearinghouse applies the applicable state screening standards and determines whether an individual is eligible for clearance. As a result, some individuals who may have previously been approved under prior screening processes may not receive clearance under the current statewide review. Individuals who are determined ineligible through the clearinghouse are afforded both state and local appeal processes. So he's appealing. But if you want to give us a call, I don't think anybody, if you're a felon, I don't think you should be able to work with kids. You made your choices, and those choices have consequences. Sometimes that's jail. I don't care what it is. I don't care if he's a super swell guy. That's the one, because we don't have the manpower anywhere to go through and say, okay, that guy, not that guy, that guy, not that girl, not that girl, that girl, but not that guy. We can't do that. So we make it very simple. You are a felon. You don't get to work with kids. You are not a felon. You get to work with kids. It's really simple. And it makes it really quick and easy. That way, anybody knows that if they are a felon, they don't get to work with kids. And if they're not a felon, they can try. And that's the end of it. And he may have been a super swell coach for a period of time and helped get kids into high school. It's really not complicated to get in high school, but a public high school especially. But either way, his former students are saying that. His former players are saying that. But he made his mistakes. He has to deal with them. Life is tough. And when somebody commits a felony, that means they show bad judgment. And I don't want a bunch of high school kids around when they decide they're going to do bad judgment again someday, which a lot of them do. All right, 855-839-1210 is the number here. We'll take phone calls on that and get some other stuff as well. Keep it right here. I'm Casey Bartholomew, sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Southampton. Yeah, it's a great place in the United Kingdom. England. Yeah, a lot of great times to go and have a vacation there. Southampton, by the way, if you're not familiar with the geography, it's about 90 minutes away from London, but it's really close to that tourist destination, the Isle of Wight. Yeah, Wight. And no, it's not because there's white people there. It's just named the Isle of Wight. It's a small little island. People take little shuttles over there and walk around and take a look at the Isle of Wight. It's a great place to go. Well, Southampton Strip Club is going to be allowed to be open until 4 in the morning. And I think that's great. Southampton looking for ways to spice up their tourist season and making it a destination for awesome people from all over the world. Yeah, the Isle of Wight, people from the United States and Canada and Mexico and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and, Dubai and even China. They go all the way to the Isle of Wight. They love it. People often forget that your neighborhood gentleman's club is, quite frankly, not only an economic engine, it can create your place, your home, your neighborhood into a tourist destination. And tourist destinations, that's like free money. They're buying things, they're paying additional sales tax. They're supporting the economy, whatever you can do. And I want to stand up to the Playhouse Gentlemen's Club. These eager beavers out there trying to make sure that tourists are able to enjoy this place almost 24 hours a day. And I don't understand why it isn't open 24 hours a day. I have a feeling the ladies that work, you know, like the 6 to noon shift, probably not the most beautiful in the world. You know, maybe they got some warts and, a mole, a funny-looking mole. But other than that, it's a lady that's undressed dancing. From the Champagne Room with Tilly the Wart Woman, I'm Velo Hool, Strippers on the Loose, Sterling, Every Damn Night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling Every Damn Night. Give us a call at 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. This is might be the most horrible human being on the face of the planet. At least in the conversation, let's put it that way. A Pennsylvania woman is accused of faking terminal brain cancer to scam family and friends out of thousands of dollars. Vanessa O'Rourke is her name. I mean, she's horrible. She's kind of cute. Just going to throw that out there. She was indicted on 15 counts of wire fraud in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. I wonder if she's taking visitors. Swing by, say hi. See what's going on. Yeah. And she is currently being sought by the FBI. Oh, I guess she's still on the run. O'Rourke. Officials say O'Rourke told her family and friends that she had been diagnosed with something I am going to mispronounce. Glioblastoma. I don't know. And claimed she needed money to help her with her medical treatments for months. O'Rourke also told family and friends that she needed to travel to Australia, where everything can kill you, for an experimental treatment for her alleged cancer. Her family and others provided the money, and in April 2016, O'Rourke went to Australia. During her trip, officials said O'Rourke engaged in a variety of leisure activities and did not receive any medical treatment because she lied. Like a liar. Apparently does not have any type of brain cancer. What did nobody went with her? I mean, I'm not saying it's anybody who gave her money's fault, but she said she had cancer, and I'm gonna go get cancer treatments. And nobody thought, you know, why don't we tag along? Why don't we go to Australia with you? And we can go there, and that way, if you have any problems from the treatment, any weakness or anything like that, we'll be there to take care of you. And just go back to the hotel and have the maid take care of you. Your family, your loved ones will be with you. Nobody thought that? Didn't occur to anybody? She probably would have a story, but what a witch. What an evil, godless witch. Now, officials stated that upon her return to the United States, she then requested that her friends and family organize two fundraisers on her behalf. A web page was created, and a benefit event was held at a local restaurant in Pennsylvania. These efforts led to many people making donations for her alleged cancer treatment. Nobody, again, there's family and friends. Nobody checked in. If I had a loved one who said they had cancer, I might swing by, you know. May not hang around, just depending on how tired they are or whatever, but I might swing by and just, you know, say, hey, you need anything? Can I bring you a beverage? Something like that, you know. But apparently nobody thought to do this. She reportedly used the funds to travel to Australia again in 2016, where she again engaged in more leisure activities and received no medical treatment because of the aforementioned lying. A federal warrant was issued for O'Rourke's arrest, and she still remains at large. It's got to be hard to find. She got no money except for the money she got for her cancer treatment, which she spent on going to Australia. She had thrown her in the water out there. And if you read recently, literally everybody, if you even dip your toe in the water in Australia, a great white shark just bites your leg off. They like take numbers. You wait in line. They just swim up and they say your turn. And you go, okay. And they bite your leg off. It's the same thing. It's like if you leave your hotel, or even if you're in your hotel, literally everything in Australia will kill you. And the opportunity to go there once, not a serious opportunity, but we were talking about it. And I was like, I don't want to, because I'm a scuba diver. I don't know if I want to go scuba diving out there because, again, go in the water, you lose a leg. And then there's house spiders are like as big as your fist, just walking around, and they use the bathroom. Sometimes they use your toothbrush because they believe in hygiene too. And there's just any number of problems and if you go outside, there's something in Australia called a bird eating spider, and it lives in trees. And if it's big enough to eat a bird, I don't want to go outside. And then I would be afraid if I was on the plane, because if you land, sometimes the killer things, snakes, spiders, sharks, whatever, can get on the airplane and swim around. But anyway, they can't find this woman anywhere, and they're looking for her. She's a Pennsylvania. This is the kind of woman who took so advantage of everybody. She wished if they could catch her and convict her, that they could somehow give her cancer. Just let her have that which she claimed to have so she could screw everybody over And then she could live with that and for as long as she possibly could. This is the kind of person you go, we should do that. Or test something on her. So just about the cube. This is the kind of inmate. This is the kind of criminal that we should be doing medical testing on. This sort of thing. That's how evil and disgusting this particular woman is. So if you see her, and again, she's kind of hot. So if you see her, you know, I don't know. But to also abduct her and do things, turn her in and call the police. All right, we got more coming up. My name is Casey Bartholomew, sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free. As he plays his kazoo, my love.
Sterling, every damn night, for me.
Casey Bartholomew is sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night. Give me a call at 855-839-1210. Say 855-839-1210. I can't fix anything. So I found this rather interesting, this story. I'm really pushed when it comes to any sort of home repair or anything like that. My abilities are very limited. I can paint a wall. I can also put like a spackle over the nail holes on a wall. I can do that. And we have now exhausted my home repair abilities. There's very little beyond that that I can do. It's troubling for my fathers-in-law. I have two. It's not I have two daddies situation. It's my mother-in-law got divorced. I have two fathers-in-law. And they are both very handy guys. They're Midwesterners. And if something's broken, they know how to fix it or can figure it out. I cannot. One of them calls me Blister because he says I show up when the work is over. So he calls me Blister. Is that true? I'm there, but I just don't know how to do anything, so I'm pointless. But anyway, so there's a lot of people like me, right, who don't know how to fix things. I'm far, far, far happier picking up the phone and calling a guy somewhere and saying, hey, come and fix my thing. That sounds really disgusting. Come fix this broken appliance, something like that, and do that. And we'll all be really happy and I'll pay him money and he'll be able to buy food and I won't have to break anything worse than it already is. But they're trying to get away from that. And one of the ways they're trying to get away with it is these things called repair cafes. What a repair cafe is a free event where volunteers with technical know-how will help neighbors fix a myriad of household items. They're part of a brand new anti-consumerism movement that's trying to offer an alternative to the mass-produced disposable goods that have dominated the global economy for the last half century. I like those. Because then when something breaks, it's just, you can just buy a new one. Now, helping fuel that move to repairing, not buying, are U.S. consumer prices, which climbed sharply again last month as the war with Iran delivered higher gasoline prices and more pain for Americans. They even had one of these events on a Saturday morning in the basement of the New Paltz. I don't know where that is. United Methodist Church. It was filled with lamps, blunt knives, malfunctioning sound mixers, and bulky zippers. Yes, zippers. And about a dozen volunteers welcomed the broken goods and their owners to the worldwide movement and either repaired it because they like doing it or showed you how to do it. I don't want to know how to do it. I just want you to do it. I'll pay you. I just want you to do it. Just fix it. After starting in the Netherlands, where they don't even have things, I don't know why they started there, with a single event in 2009, repair cafes have grown into a global nonprofit with more than 59,000 members, some 4,000 cafes, and close to 850,000 items fixed each year. According to Repair Cafe founder Martin Postma, said, we need to change our mindset. We need to change the economy. Even if repair cafes can't solve the problem alone, then they still are a very clear sign that change is needed on a much higher level. I'm okay. I know the economy's bad right now. I'm still okay just buying a new one. Whatever it is, if it's really like an easy fix, like, oh, you know, turn it off and turn it back on, I can do that. I have no skills beyond that. And I really even have a whole lot of tools. I have some, not 100% sure what they do. So I'm afraid I might hurt myself if I use them. But they're there. I have them. And if it's, like I said, if it's turning off and on, if it's, you know, peeling, tightening, so I can tighten. Tightening is a thing I can do. I can do that. But beyond that, you know, I don't need it. If they want to have a repair cafe, that's fine. But just let me bring my thing and you can repair it and I'll give you money and you go away. In New Paltz, which is a Hudson Valley college town, probably pronouncing it wrong, about 2 hours from New York, 50 people recently brought about 85 items to the repair cafe, an antique fan that required rewiring. They should have done it right the first time. Shirts, pants, jackets, and stuffed animals. I guess probably need to be sewed. Sewed? I don't know. I can't sew. I went to a store. It wasn't a thrift store. It was a bin store where they have a, like, old return stuff. And I found, like, a handheld sewing machine that you just put batteries in and you... And I haven't used it yet. I think you squeeze it and it sews. It'll close things, holes, it'll sew things. And I got one of those. So maybe I can do that. Maybe I can make money. But there were also old family photos that needed restoring and jewelry that was awaiting work, like stringing beads or replacing clasps. Also things I can't do. Repair experts waited behind long cafeteria tables to teach alternatives, giving people chances to learn that flawed goods aren't automatically junk. Again, I don't want to learn. I just want you to fix it. The experts on hand fixed 71 of the items, found that 4 needed more work, and deemed 10 beyond repair. They said they volunteer for the low-pressure joy of fixing things and networking as a side benefit. So that's the movement. You know, I'm mocking it because that's what I do for a living. But I honestly think this is really kind of cool. If somebody will fix something, if you can take something and somebody has some knowledge and they can do it, you know, this is all done donation, I'd pay. If they had a repair cafe and you have to pay like $10 to come in and people could look at the things that I need repaired. I needed the reason I bought the little fake sewing machine was I needed something sewed. It wouldn't have worked on that. So I bought it just in case something. I think old women should just go sit someplace like on college campuses, just in a room. And because I can't sew a button. I can't fix it. I can't do any of that stuff. And it has to be old women because they're the ones who know things. And they could go sit there and repair things. I think that's a great movement. I think it's a wonderful thing. I think if people want to have that done, they should absolutely have that done. I would just rather pay somebody to fix. I don't need to know how to fix. I don't have that kind of time or interest level, and I probably wouldn't be very good at it. 855-839-1210 is the number here. We got more coming up. I'm Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Smarty books, lusty books, get cozy with the yellow lantern.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Second Skin. When the resort's employees began cleaning up around them, Brendan took their cue and stood. Pulling out her chair for her, he led Anna out of the dining room and to the base of the staircase in the foyer. "Well, Samantha," he began, taking her hands in his. Hearing him speak the false name left her cold. "It's late, and I'm sure you have a flight to catch sometime tomorrow." He pressed her enclosed hands to his chest and dipped his chin, his mouth hovering perilously close to hers. "I'll be a gentleman and let you decide what happens from this point forward." She inhaled, breathing in the musky scent of his cologne. His close proximity, combined with the scintillating ideas of how he might feel on top of her flying through her mind, sent her into an intoxicating daze. Fighting the sudden trembling in her legs, she grazed his lips with hers, holding on to him to prevent the flood of arousal from knocking her off balance. No way could she let him go so soon. "I want to be with you," she murmured against him. "Let's stay together until the morning." Brendan's grip on her tightened. The smile that had melted away all her resistance over the course of the day took on a wicked edge, and her pulse quickened. Without removing her hand from his arm, he ascended the staircase in long strides, while she floated beside him in a haze of vulnerable lust. A keycard materialized from his pocket, and he swiped it through the locking mechanism. Pushing the door open, he stepped aside to let her pass. Anna entered the room, her heart pounding in her ears. As soon as the door closed, he grabbed her around the waist and assaulted her mouth. She laced her fingers around the back of his neck, parted her lips, and his tongue delved inside. The earthy remnants of the wine they'd consumed lingered, and she drank him in, submitting to the force of their frenzied kiss. They stumbled backward, her shoulders colliding with the door. But Brendan dragged his lips over her neck, replacing any discomfort with pleasure. Pinning her to the solid wood, he leaned into her with his full weight. The prospect of having him inside her caused a cascade of moisture between her legs. He nipped at the sensitive skin above her collarbone, leaving her gasping for air. Her fingers skated down his back and fumbled with the bottom of his shirt. Before she yanked it out of the waistband of his pants, he pulled away. "Wait!" His harsh exhale punctuated the demand. "Let's not rush things too much. I want to take my time with you." I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, Second Skin, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts, as well as complete audiobooks, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon. And don't forget to send me all your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's find out what happens next. Though her chest heaved with the loss of his contact, Anna smiled. Stepping away from the door, she left a space of a foot between them. When he kicked off his shoes, she followed suit. Circling behind her, he closed the gap. Brendan swept her hair over one shoulder. His mouth suspended over the top of her spine for one long moment. Then he covered her flesh with feathery kisses. Gentle lips traversed the space between her shoulder blades, and he used nimble fingers to find the zipper of her sundress. It slid down at an agonizing, slow pace, while he never ceased his tantalizing affection. He pushed the straps off her arms, and the dress fell to the floor. She climbed out of the puddle of cotton and turned around. His gaze traveled over her, cobalt eyes shining in the wan light. "Amazing," he whispered. "I knew you would look incredible But, wow. Her cheeks bloomed with heat. Now, this doesn't seem fair, does it? She teased. Another attempt at seizing the hem of his polo shirt resulted in success. He helped her pull it off over his head and toss it to the side. The ridges of his chest were well defined, even in the dim light. A sprinkling of golden curls across his pecs descended in a narrow line over his chiseled abs, then disappearing into his waistband. Her mouth watered at the thought of what lay beyond. Moving closer, she traced every line, every muscle. When she skimmed a fingertip over his chest, he choked back a groan. Dancing her fingers down the front of his body, she enjoyed the voyage to the unfastened button of his pants. The khakis fell away, revealing navy blue boxer briefs. Anna didn't have long to admire her findings before Brendan scooped her into his arms. She giggled as he carried her over to the bed and squealed when they both landed on the mattress with a thump. His lips sought hers again while his palms roamed her every curve. One hand snaked behind her back and made quick work of the hooks of her bra, and it joined the growing pile on the floor. Breaking the kiss, he angled back to stare at her bared body. Amazing, he repeated in the same hushed tones, and caressed the side of her quivering chest. Her breath hitched, and then a moan escaped when he lowered his mouth to explore the same path. Oh, unfortunately, I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Second Skin, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts that don't cut off, plus complete audiobooks, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon, and don't forget, you can always send me all your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Coming up, we're going to talk to you about a school in New Jersey that has been, well, in my opinion, abusing kids for decades. And we'll tell you how and if that does any good at all.
It's Casey Bartholomew, because Walter's forgotten who is supposed to do Sterling every damn night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Give me a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. I never heard of this. I actually lived in Jersey for a long time. But in the New Jersey city of Newark, there is no national park. For many, the only sights are the bumpers ahead while sitting in traffic. And the only hikes are at the whim of a walk sign. Because only farm children hike. Yet here, of all places, in St. Benedict's Preparatory School, a private high school that requires students to step away from their urban comfort zone, these students, many of whom have never been hiking or camping, are sent to the Appalachian Trail to learn to have sex with their sisters. No, that's not true. I made that last part up. They're sent to the Appalachian Trail for 5 days. Am I the only one that saw Deliverance? And only one who knows what happens on these remote trails that we put people on? No good things happen. But anyway, they're sent on the Appalachian Trail for 5 days with only some adult supervision. just some guy who was also on the trail. I guess that's how they figure that out. According to St. Benedict's Prep School Administrator Glenn Cassidy, Cassidy said he's willing to put money that St. Benedict's is the only school in the U.S. with such a program. Probably because nobody would go to it. Why in the name of all things holy would I, if one of my kids was forced to walk for 55 miles just to get out of school? Is that the kind of thing they let you know, by the way, beforehand? The private high school requires students to do this. I don't know when. Are they seniors? I don't know. But you have to go very limited adult supervision, and you have to walk for a trail for 5 days, 55 miles. So that's what? That's 11 miles a day? That can't be right. Maybe it is. I don't know. It still seems messed up. Do they drive some of it? Are there motels? I mean, I'll rough it. I don't need a hotel. Is there a motel? I'll do that. According to Cassidy, he said there's some adult supervision. There might be some insurance companies watching right now. But yeah, the teams generally hike independently. The program is a mandatory rite of passage for all freshmen. So it's a prep school. They're freshmen. So what are you, 13, 14 years old? And we're throwing them out in the middle of the woods with limited adult supervision? That doesn't seem like a good idea at all. I would have died when I was 13. I'm a city mouse. I stay indoors, and I go to restaurants, and I stay in my car. I don't go walking on trails because there's ticks. You know, my son-in-law has alpha gal. It's a tick-borne disease that makes you allergic to red meat, mammals, and stuff like that. I don't want that because it looks like hell. And so if you're sending kids out there, you better make sure they're protected from all that. This makes no sense to me at all. Now, they start training in early spring with exercise and team building. Then they're broken into smaller units with a captain, a camp specialist, navigators, cooks, and medics. What medics? These are high school freshmen. What freaking medics are out there? I got Band-Aids, and that's it. It's what medic are we going to get as a what 14-year-old medic? Cut him open. Get it out. I don't want that. Now, each student is trained in a specialty, but none of them know everything they need to survive. One student who's preparing to complete the hike last month said, "We'll learn how to work together in different ways and finish the task at hand." Dying. That's the task. We're going to finish that in our own unique ways. We're going to die because we all have to go and walk 55 miles, I guess. According to Cassidy, the idiot in charge, he says the idea, he's not an idiot, but still, the idea is that they have to rely on one another. The only way we can get through this is if we work together and make it there. The 55-mile trek. So 5 days, so they have to walk 11 miles a day? Is that even possible? I mean, you know, marathoners, they run. I guess if you're building up to that, I guess you build up to it. And what, they're doing it now. So it's you got the entire year to build up to this. And then somebody learns how to make fire with sticks. Somebody else learns how to cook. Somebody else, I think apparently they've got a 14-year-old medic out there. Super. Somebody learns how to tell direction and everything like that. They get my cell phone. I have the worst sense of direction of any human being you're ever going to meet. It drives one of my fathers-in-law crazy. One time we bought a house in, we were over in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. And he said, "What direction does it face?" And I went, "That way. It faces that way." No, what direction? North, south? Yeah. I said, I do not know. Well, where does the sun rise? I do not. I'm usually asleep still when the sun rises. I do not know. But if I have my, my iPhone has a little compass app. And I could do that. If I could use my iPhone, I'm okay. But I think they probably have to do it by the sun or so, probably something like that. I don't know. Either way. The 55-mile trek is now in its 53rd year. at St. Benedict's. They do it rain or shine. In fact, the administration actually prefers rain because we want him to suffer as much as humanly possible. It's a religious school. It's a Catholic school. I can say this because I went to Catholic school for 10 years. They do, in fact, want you to suffer as much as humanly possible. So that's why they prefer rain. They prefer cold. I'm surprised they don't make them do it mostly naked so that they can just be have to make clothing out of leaves or something like that. Cassidy, the guy in charge, says, when life gets difficult, it's something you can refer back to and go, what? At least I'm not in the middle of the Appalachians being chased by people who want to make me squeal like a pig. Is that what I'm supposed to look back on when I see this? Or am I supposed to go, I made it? That's it. There's no connection there. Only stupid people do that. He goes, you know, there's a lot of rainy days in life. Wow. Deep. You know what else there is in life? Cars. There's hotels. There's structures. There's buses. There's trains. There's other things that will take you 55 miles in far less than 5 days. And you don't have to trust a bunch of other jackass 14-year-olds to help you out. That's another issue there. Now, after 5 days of ups and downs, the students finished their hike in May and officially became sophomores. Do you not become a sophomore if you don't finish the hike? You have to do the 55-mile hike or you don't get to become a sophomore? I went to a all-boys Catholic high school. We didn't have to hike anywhere. One day I was a freshman, and then I passed all my classes, and the next day I was a sophomore. That's really just the way. There were no ceremonies. There were no deep areas where I had to sit there and go, you know, but sometimes it's rainy days in life, and I have to think back. I never had to do any of that. It just was a sophomore. Some were bruised. All were weary. Their shoes will never be the same, but neither will they, which is the real destination. All along. Yeah, now they hate school. Now they hate their parents. And now they hate everybody in charge of the school for this stupid idea that made them walk 55 miles in 5 days and suffer for some meaningless life lesson that I could have gotten by reading a T-shirt somewhere. A little cat in the poster, those uplifting posters, just says, hang in there. Do that. I could have done that. But instead, I had to walk. I had to learn, how to eat bugs, and I had to wander through the woods for 5 days. Otherwise, I don't get to move on today. I got to take my freshman year over again. They say they're the only place in the country that they think does this, and there's a reason. And sometimes you're the only one who does it, and it's creative and new. And if it was worth doing again, there would be copycats all over the place because it would be a really effective, cool idea. They've been doing this for 53 years, and they're the only ones because it's a bad idea. And making kids walk 55 miles in bad weather over 5 days is a bad idea and a complete and utter waste of time. And you can quote me on that. All right, 855-839-1210 is the number here. That's 855-839-1210. When we come back, we're going to talk about another, and there are multiple examples. There are always multiple examples, but this is the latest example of why you absolutely positively should not be an Uber driver, DoorDash, or anything like that. And we'll tell you what it is. That's coming up. I'm Casey Bartholomew. It is, you're just sitting in today on Sterling every damn night.
This is the show that's setting the trend. Across the nation, it's setting the trend. It's the bright, exciting sound of Sterling.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Give me a call at 855-839-1210. Say 855-839-1210. My son is one of the teenagers. He's in between high school and college. And because he's going away for college, he's having a hard time finding a summer job. And I told him, don't work. Just enjoy your last summer of freedom before basically all hell breaks loose and your life ends because you go into college and then you got to get jobs. He's thinking that he wants to get a job. And he said to me the other day, what would you think, if I became a dasher, which I guess is, modern lingo for a door dasher. I don't know, a food delivery guy, pizza delivery man. They call them door dashers. Now, I think that makes it sexy. I think you're still going to get stabbed in the throat if it happens. But I think that makes it sound a DoorDasher. And I said, no, I don't want you being a DoorDasher. In fact, no, you can't be a DoorDasher. And he said, and I believe the exact quote was, bruh, I'm 18. To which I replied, bruh, you live in my house. And the rules in my house say no DoorDashers. Because I don't want you to get stabbed in the throat. And my house, my rules. So anyway, he wanted to do that. But I have a pretty, you know, when I was a kid, my dad said, you remember photomats? That was my dream job when I was a kid. You know what that is? It was back in the days when cameras took film. And I was just a little kid. But it seemed cool to me that these people worked in the little photomat buildings in the parking lots of grocery stores and stuff. And they were little blue buildings with gold roofs. And you sat in there by yourself. I've always liked being alone. And then people would drive up, give you film, and drive away. And there were never any issues. In my mind, it was the perfect job. I basically had my own office. And everybody breathing it down my neck. Now, I thought this when I was like four. And as I used to always remind my dad of that. And he said, I never would have let you work in a photomat because of those reasons. You're sitting out there by yourself and people drive up and God knows what's going to happen. And you're, and if anything happens, you're out there all by yourself, but still sounded like a great job. But he, his, I think they were all gone by the time I could work, but he, it was his rules. So I had to do that. But anyway, so I've made those same rules for my son. And the reason being is that if you wanted to, you could look in the news and do a search and find a story almost every day where an Uber driver, in fact, there was one just a couple weeks ago where an Uber driver drove a girl home who had done the right thing. She had had been at a party, had a little bit too much to drink. She called Uber, had Uber drive her home, and she was drunk, and she got into her house, and then the Uber driver came back and sexually assaulted her. And I just assume anybody who, especially if you're a woman, anybody who Ubers is going to get sexually assaulted. Something like that is going to happen. I assume most Uber drivers are sexual assaulters. I know that's prejudgmental mental of me, but I don't care. I don't want anybody to get injured. And I myself have taken Uber, and I've never been sexually assaulted yet, but it's early. But the reason this comes up is because of the DoorDash thing. A man in Florida is accused of grabbing a female DoorDash driver during a food drop-off. Again, I don't know why a woman would ever DoorDash. If I were a woman and I were DoorDash, I would just assume that I was going to get sexually assaulted in some way. But this guy, he had a different sort of tack. Instead of just grabbing the girl and trying to sexual assault her, he was naked when she came to the door. So he was ready to go. I guess you could say he was pre-planning the entire thing. But that's more or less what was going on. Jamar Carter ordered Denny's through DoorDash, according to the arrest report. When the victim arrived at the residence to deliver the order, the man opened the door completely naked and, to put it up kind way, shall we say, he was at attention. He was completely naked and ready for business, ready for action, as it were. Now, the victim told police that when she saw Carter naked and at attention in the doorway, she dropped the food on the ground and attempted to retreat to her vehicle. However, police said Carter grabbed the right side of her hip, restrained her, and pressed the front of his person against the back of her person, trying to create new people. While trying to get away, Carter allegedly grabbed the victim's rear, according to the arrest report. The victim stated that at this point, she continued toward her vehicle, and Carter said, "Where the bleep do you think you're going?" I have not looked. Didn't think I needed to. Maybe I should before I, you know, prejudge. I'm fairly certain that is not part of the DoorDash thing. What was the report? I saw it this morning. Because you're supposed to, that's one of the other things that's creepy. I don't understand. I mean, I understand the uses of them, DoorDash and Uber and Lyft and all those things. But what I don't understand is it basically goes against everything we were taught when we were kids, right? Everything I need to know, I learned in kindergarten. Don't get into a stranger's car. What's Uber? Getting into a stranger's car. Don't take food from strangers. What's DoorDash? Literally having strangers go get your food and bring it to you. I mean, if we just listened to what our teachers in kindergarten told us, we would never have these problems. When I was on the radio, I think in Texas, when I first heard of Uber, I read about what it was. It was basically what you do is you go onto an app and you take a picture of yourself and you give it to a sex predator. And the sex predator then drives to your house and picks you up. Or the sex predator will come to where you are and then drop you off at your house. That way, the sex predator has your address in case they need. It's just like a dumping ground for information for sexual predators is all I thought Uber was. And for the longest time, I resisted taking it. I have since taken it, but I'm a disgusting man. I know things can still happen to me. I'm not stupid. But basically, if I were a female human, if I were a woman, there is, unless I had 50 other women with guns with me, I would never take Uber. If I were a woman, I would never go deliver food, and I would never be an Uber driver. In fact, I'm thinking of all the Uber drivers I had, I think I had one woman. She was younger, too. She didn't want to talk to me, and I've never had a scarier ride in my life. Drove fast, zipped in and out of traffic, got me to the airport fast. I gave her 5 stars, but it was a very stereotypical female driver there, as it were. All right, 855-839-1210 is the number here. I am Casey Bartholomew, and you are listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Summertime, and Sterling's uneasy. Sure, Reynolds and Turnpike, traffic galore. Unsuitable towels, unsuitable bedding. And God forbid Walter should have perform a chore. One of these mornings, Sterling's gonna rise up early. Gonna turn the key and take to the road. But till that morning, he'll just keep because that's his usual mode. Time and Sterling's uneasy. Some people just won't turn on the AC. So he stays down in the laundry room with a washer and dryer.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Thank you. Hey, for our first Florida... No, thank you. For our first Florida Story, it's the annual falling of the iguanas. You probably think, Parker, didn't you tell me about this last year and the year before? Yeah, it's sort of like an annual thing. iguanas, when it gets really cold, they lose bodily function. They're cold-blooded, and they will fall out of trees. And that's not really a big deal unless you're a human being walking under the tree and you get struck by a fairly large iguana. I find a little extra level of humor here in the fact that this report comes to the National Weather Service. Yes, it's raining iguanas. Is that really a meteorological phenomenon? Is that weather-related, falling iguanas? Raining lizards. That's a pretty Florida story.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Yulee, Florida. In Nassau County, there's a weigh station where a truck pulled in with an animal trailer, and it weighed out okay, but it had expired plates. They check out the driver. He has a suspended license. They check out the animal trailer, and it's a story of some neglected animals. They're all standing in piles of their own feces and urine. They're all undernourished. Some of them have wounds and medical issues that need attention. But check out this list. This is what makes it especially Florida. Animal services found in one medium-sized trailer. 4 horses, 3 miniature horses, 8 dogs, 7 cats, 1 alpaca, and 1 ring-tailed lemur. That's just freakish enough to be a little more Florida than the previous story. But why stop there? Let's take it to the next level.
Wait, hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
All right, for our next Florida story, we go to Escambia County, where a man who's suspected on being high on some serious drugs, I don't know if it's bath salt or meth or whatever, but he's walking around traffic without a shirt on, screaming at nobody, sort of talking to himself, and then he pulls on the door handle of a car. It opens, and he tries to pull the driver out. Well, the driver just hits the gas, and it knocks the messed up Florida man over. Well, the drugged up Florida man gets up, and he starts running after the car. Well, the guy keeps driving home, but the guy is so hopped up on drugs, he kind of keeps up with the guy. And by the time the cops show up, the guy's already home. He's got the drugged up dude from traffic banging on his door. So the cops tackle him. They try and cuff him, but he gets away. So then the cop's backup shows up, and that's their buddy that has the canine unit. So the dog tackles the drugged up Florida man, and it looks like he has him subdued. So the cops go over there to put the handcuffs on him. But Florida man, with some renewed drug strength, grabs the dog by the neck, tosses it, pushes 2 cops off of him, gets away again. They tase him in the neck. It's one of those stun guns, and the little prongs hit him right in the neck. It shocks him and stops him, but the second they let go of the trigger, he's gone again. And when he rounds the corner, there's another guy there that tackles him Ronnie Lott style. Oh, you're not impressed? That's not peak Florida for you? Okay, I know. It doesn't involve a Walmart or a strip club. Nobody shot a gun. I hear you. All right. Challenge accepted. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our final Florida story, we're going to Tampa, Florida. We go to the Scores Gentlemen Club. 3 a.m. Business is about to close. At closing time, 2 groups of people start arguing with each other. The argument spills out into the parking lot. The argument escalates into a shooting. The 2 groups of people get in their respective cars, continue shooting each other as they're leaving the parking lot down the highway. The only person that's confirmed to be injured is a man who was sitting across the street from the strip club. There's a Walmart. It goes through the window and hits him in the arm. Now, is that peak Florida or what? Okay, I know. There wasn't any like bath salts or meth involved or like a Casey Anthony or George Zimmerman. Come on, isn't it close? We didn't make it, did we? So close to peak Florida. Oh, it hurts.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Stalling every night. Smutty books, musty books, get cozy with the yellow man done. A falsum wonder. Falsum wonder. Study books. Rusty books, get cozy with the old and on.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid. With one last gulp, Tabitha finished off her drink. Want to head downstairs and dance? For anyone else, the answer would be no. But since you're asking, I'll make an exception. Astrid took several more sips from her glass and set the remains on a nearby table. I'm warning you, I'm a terrible dancer. She grinned. Everybody says that. I've never heard someone claim to be a good dancer. Despite her insecurities, she laughed. convince me there's so many people down there, no one will be paying attention to me. Tabitha snaked an arm around her waist, letting her hand linger on her hip. Remember, I only care about us tonight, she said. Come on, let's go. With one hand on the small of her back, she guided Astrid to a wide set of steps leading to the lower level. They inched into the mass of people, staking their claim on a tiny, unoccupied spot on the glowing floor. Music resonated throughout Astrid's entire body, the insistent bass vibrating underneath her feet. The frenzied atmosphere threatened to overwhelm her senses, but she remained focused on one person. Tabitha raised her arms and moved in time with the beat, hips swaying from side to side. Astrid did her best to forget the other people around her and match the fluid motions. Someone to her left bumped into her, throwing her off balance, while a second person tried to push between them as they shoved their way through the crowd. Whoops! Tabitha called out. She grabbed Astrid's wrist and pulled her closer, their bodies colliding. Let's not get separated. She took her other hand and squeezed, not yielding in her grasp. Her wordless smile persuaded Astrid to join in as she began dancing again. The surrounding chaos kept them pressed close together, and fire unfurled over Astrid's skin. Every touch erased her inhibitions. Every point of contact left her wanting more. See, you've got nothing to worry about. Tabitha spun her around, resting their interlocked fingers at her waist. She held her tight as they moved in unison, heat looming between them. And you feel amazing, she whispered near her ear. Astrid closed her eyes. The other woman's breath tickled her neck as her chest flattened against her back. Through the flimsy fabric of her dress, Tabitha's hands left a searing imprint, and she imagined them roaming all over her. She exaggerated the next swivel of her hips, pushing backward, and was rewarded with a throaty chuckle and a strengthened embrace. The music slowed. Several people in the crowd groaned, and some left the area, leaving mostly couples behind. Astrid slowly turned around. Tabitha's grasp on her waist remained firm. She tilted her head down, her black hair cascading forward as she resumed her movements. Her dancing had calmed to match the new tempo, yet remained as sensual and enticing as before. Astrid ran her hands up her shoulders, lacing her fingers behind her back. The velvety skin bare to her touch, exposed by the revealing tank top, made her shiver. Tabitha's fluid motions never ceased, her relentless grip encouraging her to synchronize the rhythms. Everything around her blurred into a surreal haze as Tabitha reached up to brush her hair away from her face. A feathery touch of her fingertips on her cheek sent another wave of excitement rippling throughout her. She knew what was coming, and inhaled slowly in a futile effort to dampen the thudding of her heartbeat in her chest. Their lips met in a gentle kiss. She savored the softness of Tabitha's mouth, tasting hints of the fruity drinks they'd consumed earlier in the evening. Long fingers tangled in the ends of her hair, holding her in place, while their tongues engaged in playful exploration. Somewhere deep in the recesses of Astrid's mind, she couldn't believe she was standing in the middle of a busy nightclub, kissing a woman she barely knew. But her desire won out over rational thought. Gene needed this. All too soon, the song ended, replaced by another fast-paced electronic beat. Tabitha broke the kiss, but leaned her forehead against Astrid's. "We could keep dancing, grab another drink, or get out of here," she said. "What do you say?" At that moment, Astrid would have accepted an invitation to follow her anywhere in the galaxy, but a new idea popped into her head. "I know a place we can go," she said, nodding toward the steps. "I think I should stop there for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid, which is available at Amazon for Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance, Craig Kitchen. Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.
A great way to end your day.